Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Fox begins February 2022 by giving 8 personalities the opportunity to move like the wind and not put themselves in a corner. It's all about mastery of the real dirty dancing. Executive producer and showrunner Dan Martin joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Now that we know who will play on Pro Football's Supreme Stage a week from Sunday, will you watch Super Bowl 56? I'll pose that TV query and others next half hour to someone quite notable for his unique take on sports, TV, and the world. I'm talking about Queens Chronicle columnist Lloyd Carroll. Also ahead, ratings for Sunday's NFL Conference Finals and last night's Betty White tribute, new series Potpourri, and our new, yes, new, classic trivia question. Oh, yes, it's all about football. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Verbal, Reason, Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Music. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. A very happy start of February, Chinese and New Year, Black History Month, etc. to you and all. And welcome once again to the special Tuesday hour of the program about TV's current and future. Let's get right to it. Lots to cover. Good guests along the way, and you, we want to hear you with your phone calls and chat room inquiries. So use the phone, this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. Shy about the phone, use this chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn screen, all the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Dan Martin from The Real Dirty Dancing, premiering tonight on Fox. He joins us live from Venice, California, after these news notes. Both NFL Conference Championship games Sunday scored with the public. The contest on CBS and Fox, respectively, averaged 49 million viewers each, a 13% rise from 43.3 million, catching last year's conference finals. About 200,000 people watched Fox Deportes' presentation of the NFC Conference Final in Spanish. As for NBC's Betty White tribute last night, that special attracted 4.1 million viewers, while Fox's combo of 9/11 Lone Star and The Cleaning Lady was the top-rated primetime lineup among the broadcast networks. It's been a busy news Tuesday at Paramount Plus, thanks to their presentation at the TV Critics Association Tour in Los Angeles. The mega content offering approved second seasons for Mayor of Kingstown and The Game Revival, and a sixth season for former CBS attraction SEAL Team. On the scripted series development action department, Dear White People creator Justin Simien is working on a Flashdance adaptation. Urban Cowboy will get a new treatment, and Better Call Saul star Bob Odenkirk has hooked up with docuseries effort Guru Nation. AMC Networks is starting to arrange its 2023 new season agenda for AMC and AMC Plus. Both services will premiere a pair of six-episode dramas. Damascus follows the self-discovery of a 30-something African-American, while Invitation to a Bonfire, based on Adrienne Selk's best-selling novel, explores a love triangle inside an all-girls boarding school. No word yet on casting or a production timetable. Now quickies, docudrama special Frederick Douglass in 5 Speeches will get an HBO presentation February 23rd. Now and then, Apple TV Plus's bilingual scripted suspense tale comes to viewers May 20th. Oscar nominees Rosie Perez and Marina del Tavira headline the cast. A new Lionsgate-produced series for Roku will dramatize Hollywood studio shenanigans. Swimming with Sharks is the series, looking at an April debut. 1970s Los Angeles set comedy Minx, that's M-I-N-X, will arrive on HBO Max March 17th. 2 episodes will play each week through April 14th. And Amy Schuller's Hulu comedy Life and Beth will premiere on March 18th. And that is news notes for today. Now joining me live in an internet radio same-day exclusive, from Venice, California, the executive producer and showrunner of the new Fox series premiering tonight, The Real Dirty Dancing, Dan Martin. Dan, thanks for coming our way today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Simon.
How long have you and the Fox folks thought about doing Dirty Dancing in some unscripted fashion?
Well, I got really fortunate in that the production company Eureka had pitched the show to Fox just around the time the pandemic hit. So it got shut down at first. And then when they kicked the idea back up, Fox asked me to come on board and show run the effort starting just in April last year.
Why do you think Dirty Dancing continues decades after it was made and became a big box, a real surprise box office hit? Why it continues to have a lasting impact on people?
For me, it's a couple of things. Obviously, it's a beautiful movie and it's a fun story of somebody learning how to dance. But it's also these hero journeys for both Baby and Johnny. The challenges they're up against, how they respond to them, how they grow throughout the movie. And really, anybody watching can respond to that and connect to that, one of those characters in some way. So whenever you see the film, at least whenever I see the film, there's always something to connect to that carries me through.
Mm-hmm. So working with Lionsgate, you are doing this series. It's a four-part special event or mini-series. How did you put it together, and how did you find the celebrities that were willing to play Johnny and Baby?
Well, it was a long casting process. First, we started blocking the show out. How could we do it over a four-episode run? How do we do it up at the location? And then we just started reaching out to people, every agency, anybody who might be interested, gathering interest and putting together an idea of what would be an amazing cast. And we got really lucky with the cast we ended up with. Better than I ever thought we would.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the cast, because it's quite interesting. You have people from different walks of life in terms of entertainment. You have people that we know not only from scripted shows, but unscripted shows, including Food Network personality Kat Corp, Iron Chef, and so forth. And you even have a dancer in Corbin Bleu, who had a very big dance as well as acting career.
That's certainly true. We, as you put it best, we have somebody from every walk of life. And that's how we went about trying to cast the show as well. In order to make it as wide appealing to the audience as possible, we wanted to find somebody from all these different arenas that we could bring together and put them together so they can respond to each other. But we've got fans from wrestling, football fans, Bachelorette fans, as you said, Food Network fans, Backstreet Boys fans, because of the people we cast. And so everybody comes together in one, and hopefully they can become fans of new people when they join as well.
We're speaking with Dan Martin. He is the executive producer and showrunner of Fox News' new miniseries premiering tonight, The Real Dirty Dancing. It premieres at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on the local Fox station. And Dan is with us live from Venice, California this half hour on the special Tuesday edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom Abba, I'm with you live from New York, 37 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for Dan, make the phone call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. This is the second of three episodes we're doing this week. Our third episode is on Friday, a half hour earlier than normal. It's 2:30 p.m. Eastern time, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. And joining us, reset from last Friday, will be the managing director of the station consortium that is deploying next-gen television all over the country, Ann Schell from Pearl TV. Plus, we'll have actor and singer Marques Houston. He has his own production company, and he is the executive producer and co-star of the new Tubi made-for-TV movie, Howard High, which premieres on Friday. So they'll both be with us, Ann Schell and Marques Houston, live Friday, special time, 2:30 p.m. Eastern. That's 11:30 in Pacific, here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. When you were able to get the eight personalities, the celebrities together, what was their first thought about taking on such an iconic competition based on an iconic movie?
It was kind of a mix of a few. Initially, on every Zoom meeting, because we did all these initial meetings by Zoom, everybody was like, wow, really? And you want me? So in that sense, we have a very humble cast, which was amazing. But then they were also really excited. They're like, really, we get to go to the location of the film, dress up in the wardrobe of the film, do the dances from the film, and all at once. They were all really pumped to do it.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times when you watch an unscripted television series, no matter where you watch it, there's a lot of backstory now about why individuals want to do it. What were the kind of backstories that developed out of seeing these eight people take on, you know, the character, the place, the choreography, the atmosphere that you designed for the series?
That's a really good question. Each person's backstory is a bit different. We definitely touch on that throughout the series because we want to relate their motivation for doing the show to how they're growing as they proceed through it. But, for example, Brie Bella, she's a new mom. She'd gotten out of wrestling. She was just a year from having a baby. and she wanted to dive into something. She's like, I've never really felt like this sexy woman, but this gives me an opportunity to discover that in myself. That's what she told us. And so it's stories like that that are just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. You said that you take this at the real location for the film. What was it like to go to Mountain Lake Lodge in Virginia, which served as the Kellerman's Lodge in the film?
And it was like it's frozen in time. The group there and Heidi, the general manager, specifically, has done such a great job maintaining that lodge that anybody coming up the mountain to see it, you're literally stepping back in time to be part of the movie.
And did COVID, did the coronavirus pandemic interfere at all in terms of getting the show produced, in terms of having a production crew go through everything?
I certainly made it more difficult. There were more steps involved. But one of the upsides of shooting up on a mountaintop in Virginia is there wasn't much public interaction. So in a way, once we were there, everybody was tested, we were able to create our own bubble that essentially was never interfered with. So we still tested every day, took care of each other, wore all the protective gear. But without any interaction with random public, we were in a much safer environment than a lot of shoots would be on location.
Mm-hmm. Did anybody not see Dirty Dancing before taking on being in this series?
I'll just give this away. When Antonio Gates signed on to the show, he had never seen it. However, just before he flew out, he sat down and watched Dirty Dancing with his kids, and he loved it. It made him really excited to participate in the show because they were so excited that he was going to be part of this movie.
Mm-hmm. For those who know Antonio Gates, he's the wonderful Hall of Fame tight end for the San Diego Chargers, has a great 16-year NFL career, 8 Pro Bowls, tremendous career in terms of his production and his results. How long did everybody stay at this location? What give us the regimen. I know you can't say what the results are, but give us like the regimen of what these 8 celebrities went through once they got on location.
Essentially, including the time for COVID testing, we had a little less than 2 weeks on location, and we had 8 days of filming. 2 days per episode, basically. On the first day, people would partner up, they would do challenges, and they would start learning a routine, creating a routine. And then 24 hours later, on the second day, they would have to perform. So they literally only had 24 hours to put a routine together.
So on each episode, they learn one routine and do it?
They learn one routine and do it, and they also take part in a series of challenges where they have to step into the shoes of Baby or Johnny and recreate some of the scenes from the film.
What are some of the scenes they recreate? And we'll get to the choreography in a moment, but what are some of the scenes that they recreate?
Certainly they carry the watermelons into the staff quarters. They do the ladies all did the baby dancing on the bridge sequence with Wipeout playing in the background. The men on the very first day had to step into the shoes of Johnny and recreate the scene where Baby first saw Johnny in the dining room, where Johnny walks in with his crew and he gets stopped by Max Kellerman. And that's just in the first episode. So we definitely went to the log, we went to the lake, we got the car from the movie and did the She's Like the Wind scene in the final act. And then, of course, the top 2 couples had to recreate the entire final dance, including acting and dancing.
Mm-hmm. How much prep, by the way, did your production crew have to do to recreate how it looked in the movie? So that not only does, you know, the celebrities have to recreate the steps and recreate the acting and so forth, but the crew also has to recreate how the movie looks for the benefit of the viewer.
And it was certainly a tall task, especially up in the mountains of Virginia. But we had a very resourceful production design team. They were scouring thrift shops, resale shops, all within a tri-state area, trying to find things, costumes, wardrobes, set pieces that align directly with the film. So some of the film certainly existed. The gazebo is still right there on location. The lodge looks exactly the same. But things like the lover boy scene, we had to recreate from scratch because that was actually filmed on a soundstage in Los Angeles. But when you see the series, it really is impressive what our production design team was able to do in order to make some of those things look exactly like the film.
Mm-hmm. Now, talk about the choreography. What are the routines that the celebrities learned, and who taught it to them?
So we had two choreographers. It was Jonathan and Oksana Platero. You might, if you're a dance fan, you might know them. They were both on So You Think You Can Dance, Dancing with the Stars several times. And they're a super talented team. So they took some of the original steps and moves from the movie and then put them into new routines that the celebrities could perform in each episode. So between them and some other dancers, they helped teach the celebrities different moves and the choreography. But the celebrities also contributed some of their own ideas to those movements.
A lot of people know, of course, the lift, and I understand that is one of the routines, but what are some of the other ones? I think one of them I would think about would be the one to do, I think it was Do You Love Me in the film, which has the very suggestive moves, including what I call the roundhouse, the dips, that the women have to do.
Yep, that's absolutely true. In fact, I don't want to give away too much, but we surprised the celebrities on the first day and had them walk straight into the staff quarters, just like the scene in the movie with watermelons, and then they had to get dancing.
And did you
do
the
Stargate
scene?
Go
ahead, Dan.
We definitely did. Oh, I was going to say, we did a series of different dance steps and moments from the movie, always with a slightly new choreography, but incorporating some of the moves from the film. So you'll recognize Hungry Eyes, which everybody competed to in episode 2. Do You Love Me was a competitive song in episode 3. And then Time of My Life, of course, in episode 4.
And I understand that you have judges along the way that also review and ultimately at the end, two of the eight are going to be, one is Baby, one is Johnny, and they'll sort of be the champions. Who are the judges?
So we were very fortunate to have special guest judge Jane Brucker come in, who played Sister Lisa in the film. And it was her first time back at Kellerman since she actually shot the original movie. So she guest judged one episode and might have given us a little version of the Hulahana, the song she sings at the end of the film. And then for the next episode, Twitch's very own baby, Allison Holker-Boss, came in to be our guest judge. In the final episode, we didn't have guest judges, but what we had was an audience, a live-in-studio audience of diehard Dirty Dancing fans. I mean, these people dressed up from the time frame, dressed up in costume, and they were the ones voting on which couple they thought should be the winners.
The Real Dirty Dancing, it's Fox's new unscripted miniseries, which is based, of course, on the superb iconic film. Way back when, and it premieres tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on your local Fox station. We've got Dan Martin, the executive producer and showrunner of the series, with us live and exclusive from Venice, California, here this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom Abbott with you live from New Haven, New York. If you have a question or comment for our guest in our remaining minutes with him, well, make a call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up in our next half hour, along with Lori Carroll, the popular columnist of the Queen's Chronicle, we have a brand new classic trivia question, 5 prizes in play. We'll get that to you before the top of the hour. And if you're first with the direct answer, you'll win all 5 of those prizes, including the DVD of the recent special on BYU TV and PBS, 20 Years of Christmas with the Tabernacle Choir with both material. We've got the unofficial Hocus Pocus cookbook, the Betty White tribute book, One Remarkable Moments in Extraordinary Life by Ray Richmond, the popular entertainment columnist. And we also have the Freak Brothers t-shirt from Tubi and the Loud House crayon set from Nickelodeon. Those all can be yours if you know the correct answer to our football-minded classic trivia question. So stay tuned for that. That's in our next half hour. As you were putting the celebrities through their paces, Dan, what was surprising to you that you didn't expect? What was like the curveball about how this experience landed on people?
It's always surprised me, and I've done reality competition TV for a while, but to have celebrities who've been through every element of entertainment or sports and been hit with everything, I'm surprised probably isn't the right word, but I was so pleased that our celebrities dove in head first, gave everything they got. We would try to cut off rehearsals, and they would say, no, please, we want to keep going. They would go as late as they wanted to until they felt comfortable. So it was great to see them dive in with just so much determination and energy.
Mm-hmm. Were they energized by the, when they had to do that final scene routine, how much did the audience energize them?
I think a live audience always energizes, and it was great that we were able to do that during a COVID time as well, test everybody and make sure they were isolated and have that live audience, because dancing down that aisle, doing the steps originally created by Kenny Ortega, amazing choreographer. For Corbin Blue, for example, that was always a dream of his. He loved Dirty Dancing growing up, and he looked up to Patrick Swayze as Johnny Castle and never really thought he'd have this opportunity. But there he is in the wardrobe with the music, with a live audience, doing those exact steps.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask about one of the other members of the cast here, and that's the person we all come to know from the not only from So You Think You Can Dance, but also the Ellen DeGeneres Show, the resident DJ Twitch. What was it like for him to step into the role, to sort of step out of being a judge role or a DJ role and step into a different kind of dance for himself?
It was amazing for me because I've worked with Twitch a few times in the past, obviously an incredible dancer and an incredible host in the way he can drive things through. This was a very unique role for him in that he was a host and mentor. So he had to move the traffic through on the show, but also he was stepping into rehearsals, giving advice, helping the couples become more like Baby and Johnny to hit the part of the steps that maybe weren't their best skill set. The way he mentored these couples through really improved their ability both in dancing but also in acting and performing.
Mm-hmm. How has the world of unscripted television evolved since you have been involved with it as a producer?
Boy, it's come a long ways. Something that's really unique about this project is that we were able to use the film clips, that we were able to use all the music and recreate that movie magic. So we're doing a dance competition show, but in the environment where they shot the movie and with the music, with the film clips, it's like a reality show you've never seen before and certainly not one that I've ever worked on before.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about your unscripted career. How long you've been in the field and what was your, like, breakthrough role or your breakthrough entrance into unscripted work?
Boy, it's long. So I started a long time ago. I was living in Maine, and I came into – I happened to meet the producer of The Real World in 2003, and he offered me a job to come down and work on Real World Philadelphia. So here I was, just this kid from Maine. That turned into a few seasons of The Real World. Then I moved to L.A., just to take a chance and see what was there. And that was really my breakthrough moment, was that I got an interview for Dancing with the Stars coming into season 3. And I'd always loved dance. I was a theater and dance major in college. Never very good at dance, but always loved it. So when I got that opportunity, and at the time it was actually Rob Wade, who was the president of Alternative Fox, who gave me that opportunity, that was my breakthrough because I got to combine two loves. It was TV and dance all together. And I ended up staying with Dancing with the Stars, moving up through it for 10 and a half years.
What was it like doing Dancing with the Stars with hosts like Tom Bergeron and with a director like Alan Trzitzky, who one of the best dance directors ever on television? He just seemed to have a great knack for showing where to put the cameras and, more importantly, how to hold the camera shot. He never did the old what some directors do, which is we got to move the camera every 4 seconds. We got to switch. He would stay with a camera shot for like 25, 30 seconds at a shot because he knew that if you can move the camera around, you can capture more of the environment of the dance that way and really let the viewer in on it.
Alex is a brilliant dance director. As you said, not to be afraid to just hold the shot so you can enjoy the performance and know the moments to switch out to a different camera to keep it fresh. But working with Alex for years, he taught me a lot about how to shoot and to capture dance. And then as for Tom Bergeron, I mean, there's no better hosting a business, that guy's amazing. The way he can make everybody feel so comfortable with who they are, even though they're completely fish out of water doing something for the first time, it just shows on TV.
Yeah. He is a master of live television. He can be in the moment at any time.
Any time. It's so impressive.
Mm-hmm. So with your production company, what else can we expect from your work in 2022? What else are you working on?
I'm working on a couple of new projects for Fox. Nothing that we're 100% greenlit on yet, but I think we're coming through. And I'm really excited because they're big performance vehicles, things that I think could really change the landscape of some traditional shows that we've seen before. Just take it to a new level and a different level. So I can't say much more than that, but Fox has some great things coming up in the works.
The Real Dirty Dancing, opening night tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local Fox station. Check your local listings where Fox is available in your area. And don't forget, if you missed the show tonight, you can catch it the next day and beyond on Tubi, Fox's multi-channel bundle. More details about the promo online, you can go to Fox.com. And for the Tubi side of things, www.tubi.tv. That's Fox.com and www.tubi.tv. The Real Dirty Dancing, tonight on Fox, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Dan Martin, the executive producer and showrunner, congratulating on getting the show off the ground. I have a hunch it's going to be dynamite, especially for fans who love the film and beyond. And we'd love to have you back to talk about what else your production company is doing. It's been a real pleasure having you on.
Thank you very much, Simon. I hope you enjoyed the show tonight.
Definitely will. Take care. Have a great, great time.
You as well. Bye.
Dan Martin, the executive producer and showrunner of The Real Dirty Dancing, tonight on Fox, 9:10 Pacific Time, joining us live from Venice, California. March Market Televised is coming your way, but first some words to the fine folks at our sponsor, Audible.com. You're looking for a thriller? I mean a thriller about somebody who spent like 5 years in prison for a crime he or she didn't commit. They come back to their hometown, and the hometown, like, turns them off. Well, that's what we're talking about. Reminders of Him by Colleen Hoover. That's one of the newest audiobooks you can get right now with a one-month trial at Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 250,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device and whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and our various podcast affiliates. And remember, you can sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, that one-month trial, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and while supply lasts, important health and wellness information. Get this, too. If you're an Amazon Prime customer already, it's two audiobooks for your trial of one, and one of those books can come from the fast-growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking about original audio productions and podcast series, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, great one-woman and one-man shows, and so much more. And don't forget, Audible.com, a subscription, makes a great gift for you or anyone you love any time of the year, including Black History Month and Chinese New Year Lunar Year, which started today. So for all the details, go to audibletrial.com/televised. When we come back, our very good friend from the Queen's Chronicle, Lloyd Carroll, and I talk a lot of shopping sports TV, from the Super Bowl to the Olympics, and much more. He comes aboard after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching nearly 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, tonight at 8 p.m. on VTR, it's the popular Independent Music Showcase, the latest cutting edge in music from independent artists. The Independent Music Showcase tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best VTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on a special Tuesday edition, kicking off February 2022. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, 37 degrees at the bottom of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for our guest ahead, ring that phone, 646-652-2906. That number's good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on VTR. And also, you can check out our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And now, joining me live here in New York, one of our favorite guests, we haven't heard from him in a long time. He is the great columnist from the Queen's Chronicle. He covers sports, he covers TV, the rest of the world along with it, our good friend Lloyd Carroll. Lloyd, welcome back, and Happy New Year, plus a month.
Yes, I have. Thank you. Happy Chinese Lunar New Year, Simon. And terrific. I didn't realize this was the, you know, the time goes by here. 35 years since the other Dirty Dancing premiered in theaters. I was going to start singing I've Had the Time of My Life here. But good to see that brand is still going strong.
Yep. It's going to be fun to see how those contestants, those celebrity contestants, go through the paces. So anyway, Lloyd, let's get into
sure.
the Super Bowl first. Now that we know that Cincinnati and the Los Angeles Rams are going to be the participants, given the fact that last year's Super Bowl on television was the lowest rated in quite some time, 91 million viewers, what's the outlook for a week from Sunday on NBC?
You know, I think it'll be better than that. It's funny, if you would said 20 years ago, Los Angeles is one of the teams, you think it's going to be one of the highest-rated Super Bowls, just on that fact alone. And I think the fact that it's in the L.A. market, in Southern California, is going to be a big draw, but it won't be the highest, it won't be the lowest, it will be somewhere in the middle. It's funny, Al Michaels, as we know, this is his last he's not retiring, but his last telecast looks like for NBC. And his reaction, I think, when Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers were not going to be playing in this game, you could hear the palpable disappointment. You know, like Al Michaels will certainly get a big TV contract wherever, but he certainly wants this to be. He wanted this to be one of the highest rated games, just you know, for leverage, if nothing else, and. There's no question not having Brady, not having Aaron Rodgers, that's going to hurt. And so that's, you know, Matthew Stafford's a nice story, but let's face it, in terms of drawing in that marginal fan, he's not, from an NFC point of view, he's not going to be Brady, and he's certainly not going to be Aaron Rodgers, given, of course, Rodgers, people will be rooting for him or against him, obviously, given all the vaccine stuff. And the other, Joe Burrow's a nice story, but Cincinnati is Cincinnati. You know, people know Patrick Mahomes from the State Farm ads. He's a household name at this point. So that's, you know, there's definitely a little luster that's kind of worn off here, and through nobody's fault. And it can still be a great game. But if you're asking me just in terms of numbers, that's going to hurt.
It's also sort of they're breaking up the Sunday football gang of ours at NBC. As you said, it's probably going to be Al Michaels' last game, Michelle Tafoya's last game on the sidelines, Jay Collinsworth, who has been on the sidelines of the playoff games NBC has presented so far. He sounds like he is going to be, just like his dad, a great commentator. What's your thought about, do you think this is a transition for Sunday football?
Well, there's no question. I'm glad they're going to hold on to Chris Collinsworth. There was talk that Drew Brees was going to replace him. I think that's a mistake. I think Brees, he's good, but he's not Collinsworth. Mike Tirico, I think, and maybe I'm speaking of a little Queen's pride here since Mike is from Whitestone, went to Bayside High School, and I do know him. I think he's going to be terrific. Look, Al Michaels is still great at what he does, but he's not irreplaceable. And I think Mike Tirico will be fine. I know it's going to sound like I'm taking a shot at Michaels. He's good at what he does. I have felt, frankly, that he's lived off one line that he uttered in Lake Placid for most of his career. And like you said, he's fine, but I an eagle. There's so many others that are just as good, if not better. But because of the whole do you believe in miracles, he's had that halo effect going since 1980. So that's just my take on. I know that may not be the conventional wisdom or the politically correct thing to say, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of Iron Eagle, what do you think about the second annual Nickelodeon playoff game with his son Noah, who seems to be...
Oh, well, Noah's
going to
be an old pro. I like it. I like it. I think Nate Burleson, it's funny, I ran into Nate Burleson at the sports broadcasting dinner, Hall of Fame dinner, and I called him Mr. Viacom because it seems like he does everything at that network. Bob Backish might as well just make him his vice chair at this point, whether it be doing the CBS mornings, doing the NFL Today, and he does, I think, Slime Time for Nickelodeon and doing this game. He was terrific, and so was Noah. They They really, and they had a great game to work with. But even if the game had been a blowout, they knew how to incorporate the kids, work in the Nickelodeon characters, and be able to do something that's almost a high wire act here. Be able to try to frame the game for kids who may not know that as much about football, but still have adults kind of chuckling along and not feeling that they're being spoken down to. I thought they were terrific.
Yeah, me too. And I think Noah and Nate should team up for some regular season games on CBS too. By the way, it seemed that this year, this past season, the season about to pass, there was a lot more effort to try to do some interesting approach to the game. They had ESPN had the Peyton Manning, Eli Manning show on ESPN2 for most of their Monday Night Football games. Again, you had the MegaCast in some situations. You had this Nickelodeon game for the second year in a row. Are you getting a sense that the NFL is realizing that we have to try different formats of the game in order to keep viewers or try to expand the viewing base?
Well, clearly, and baseball's paying attention, too. I think ESPN for their Sunday night game, which doesn't get the buzz that football does, but they're going to be working in Michael Kay and Alex Rodriguez in kind of the same Manning cast, so to speak, for want of a better term here. And I think it works because it brings in, I call the marginal consumer. And that's something that sports networks have to understand. I think television networks get it, certainly understand. How do you bring in that extra consumer who may not be a diehard sports fan? I mean, I always say sports is part of the entertainment industry, but for too long we've kind of catered to the hardcore fan. And in some ways, if you turn on television these days, now that we have legal gaming in a lot of states, you can't put on the television set New York or Philadelphia without seeing 35 ads for Wynn, Rivers Casino, you name it. So if anything, it seems like the sports fan who likes gambling and therefore has to be really knowledgeable about the sport is being lionized, while the marginal consumer kind of gets forgotten about more than ever. So by doing this, making it entertainment, saying, well, okay, you just want to watch the game. You don't really care who wins or who loses. You just want to have a little fun, have something you can converse with, maybe with the old water cooler comp term. We haven't used that in ages, probably since, particularly since COVID got underway. But I could see that happening as life gets back to normal. I could see this being really successful in a variety. I think you can see all sports eventually adopting this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe soon we'll see interactivity as well.
That's going to be coming
format,
too. No question about it.
Most of the stuff and even determine what replays you see.
Sure. I could see, you know, particularly with Twitter, something as simple as that. I could see, you know, like the Mannings having fun with that. As long as it's kept clean, I think I can see that working.
In a moment, we're going to talk about what may be the big story of sports this year, and that is the Winter Olympics coming, that starts tomorrow, by the way, on USA Network, and the fact that NBC may be in a very precarious position along with Peacock. We'll talk about that in a moment with the wonderful sports TV columnist and lifestyle columnist of the Queen's Chronicle, Lloyd Carroll. Check out his work, by the way, at Queen Chronicle's website. And he's with us this half hour from Nueva York, along with yours truly, Simon Applebaum, on Tomorrow Be Televised. We want to hear from you, too. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name. And coming up also before the top of the hour, new classic trivia question. Yes, it's football-related. And if you are the first to come up with the correct answer, you win 5 prizes. Lloyd, the Olympics start tomorrow on the networks of NBC Universal, 2 days before the actual opening ceremony. It seems that NBC Universal is in a very precarious position. They're coming off 7 months earlier, the worst Olympic reigns they've ever had. Peacock did not get the bounce they hoped they would have, despite, I thought, very good coverage. And it seems that with the games being in China, they're being very, very uber sensitive.
Can't argue with that, Simon. I think this has disaster written all over it. The only thing that could save the games for NBC, they need a breakout American star who's going to win so many gold medals would put Wheaties to shame. They need that one, you know, that one athlete that can do that. And so it's, you know, we'll have to see if there's a Michael Phelps out there of the ice skating world, but they're really in a lot of trouble. And they don't even have the National Hockey League to fall back on. I mean, I think the NHL knew they weren't going to Beijing no matter what, particularly once their deal with Comcast ended. Why would Gary Bettman want to interrupt his season to send his athletes halfway around the world, and particularly in a COVID-ridden world? It made absolutely no sense. So I'm not even sure who's playing on any of these teams. So that's a major blow, because even if you don't care about it, look at it from a typical reader for me, the guy who reads the back of the Post, maybe reads my column, he doesn't really care about figure skating. He couldn't care about curling, but he does care about hockey. And there went the one hook to get them to maybe watch other events while waiting for their hockey game to begin, or maybe watching after it's over. I think this is going to be a major problem for them. The fact that their announcers are not going to be in Beijing, that they're going to be in Stamford, Connecticut around the clock, you know, it's not their fault. NBC was not looking to save money here, but it takes something away. There's just no two ways about that. I think also the fact that games, that's over 2 weeks long. You know, when I was watching Saturday Night Live, they said, oh, our next telecast is going to be February 26th. And my wife turned to me and said, why are they going to wait so long? And I had to explain, well, because NBC's having the Olympics all this time. I just think that just adds the whole downer of a feeling. But the only time NBC is going to get away is because of the Super Bowl. As a Comcast shareholder, I have to step out here. I'm not happy about this. And I feel like neither is Mark Lazarus, but he won't admit it.
Well, you know, Lloyd, I think you've put your finger on one of the issues that has dogged NBC's coverage of the ratings for the coverage, not just last year in Tokyo, but really all along. I mean, the ratings have gone down, 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 down. And I'll just quickly tick off what I think are some of the big issues. And many of them are not NBC's fault. Number one, the International Olympic Committee, which for me personally, personal thought, is the worst sports organization in the world, has made two big errors. Error number one, going from a winter and summer games the same calendar year every 4 years to a winter or summer games every 2 years. It took away the specialness. It took away the uniqueness. It became very mundane. Two, starting the games with competition before the opening ceremonies. Like, why do you have an opening ceremonies if you're having competition 2 or 3 days earlier, which is the case starting tomorrow night, by the way, in USA Network with curling? Second problem, and you hit the button, the sports media world does not care about the Olympics. They don't cover the games. They do not cover in between the games. They don't give you the sense of the athletes, whoever. So you come in with, like, who should we root for, whether it's the USA or somebody else, whether it's sports talk radio stations, sports talk networks, national television, regional sports networks, local television stations, sportscasts. There's nothing about the Olympics. And then on top of that, I think another problem is that, unlike decades ago, when if a broadcast network had the games in prime time and everybody else played dead, nobody plays dead anymore. Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, and this pair of mega content service, Paramount Plus, HBO Max, they're going to pump original shows while the Olympics are on, and they're going to get a lot of audience. And I think that, and on top of that is the whole situation with Beijing, where I think NBC really subdued the promotion of the games in terms of not showcasing the Olympic trials, not showcasing athletes to watch, and then, of course, a week or a half ago, having that video presentation instead of a 30 Rock Live presentation where you couldn't go in and question the stars and the talent.
Well, no question. COVID has really hurt that. I agree with you, Simon. There's nothing like face-to-faces. Look, we're both in the media. We both want to talk to the newsmakers, the executives, the talent. And being denied that certainly hurt. And it hurts, you know, what I do certainly would hurt what you would do in terms of booking guests. It's almost like it's become a dirty little secret. Now they're praying for ratings, but I just don't see it. The interest just isn't going to be there. Now, again, what could possibly change things? If this U.S. hockey team, for example, who we don't know, there's no NHL players on it, but if it's like 1980 and they're having a good run and the Russians are causing mischief at the Ukrainian border, and sure enough, you get some sort of, let's say, at least in the semifinal round, if not the final, a U.S.-Russian meetup, that might actually change our opinion like a month from now. We might be talking about a great Olympics this was. So you just don't know how that could – but at this point, I would agree. The conventional wisdom is this is going to be trouble.
Yeah. And the irony is that I think Molly Solomon, the executive producer of NBC Sports' Olympic coverage, has done, in the last couple of times she's done it, a tremendous job. The camera work is the best ever. The graphics are the best ever. I think the team-ups that she's had in terms of play-by-play and commentators are outstanding. In the Tokyo Games, she actually went out and got talent from ESPN and from CBS, et cetera. I think Noah Eagle did the 3-on-3 basketball. Beth Mowins did from ESPN did coverage of the very sport. And it worked. It was terrific. And that's the shame. And Peacock, with their special morning show programming, the Snoop Dogg, Kevin Hart highlights, which are not being done this time around, they did some wonderful things with the games. And with Peacock, you can also, as a viewer, you can see all the, this time around, see all the events live, see them on tape, see them when you want, arrange it by sport, by athlete, and by nation. It's a perfect viewing experience. I think that NBC Universal wanted Peacock now to become the way to see the games, as opposed to NBC broadcast. And I know that with NBC Universal, you're serving several masters. You're serving the cable operators, you're serving broadcast stations, you're serving the Peacock, and so forth. And it seems to me now that they're trying at least to prepare viewers for the mega-content era where Peacock is going to be the place you see the Olympics.
You know, Simon, you raise an interesting point, one that I didn't really consider. Maybe, again, I'm showing my age as an old linear TV guy more than a streamer, although I do check out the streams every now and then. It's an age thing. This could be a big loss leader. That is, NBC may be willing to just bite the bullet, but again, if this helps launch Peacock as a sports destination, remember, there's no NBC Sports Network anymore, which I thought was kind of weird only because they knew they'd have the Olympics. If you're going to shut it down, might as well shut it down April 1st. Why shut it down December 31 if you have these Olympics still going on? I mean, I just thought that was a little weird, but clearly they're putting all their chips in on Peacock. And the funny thing, Simon, I still don't know what they want to do with Peacock, meaning the following. At first, their tagline was, you can't not watch or whatever, with all the double negatives, meaning that they weren't charging for anything. Then they're suddenly picking up the WWE Network, which is not a freebie for consumers. And next thing, I'm also seeing that there's this Jennifer Lopez, Owen Wilson movie about Valentine's Day. And I'm trying to figure out, that's not a freebie. You know, are they a pay-for portal? Are they a, you know, I don't, I think that's going to cause confusion with the masses.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll certainly see what happens. It's and by the way, I think NBC, personal thought, I think NBC could have done this event at 30 Rock. I don't buy the COVID situation. They could have had everybody come to 30 Rock, show your vaccine card, social distance, could have done it. I think it's a semi-cop-out. And
you're
100%
right. And I've got to tell you, I don't want to steer this away from, you know, from what you want to do here, Simon. But again, I have to now speak as a sports writer, aside from just writing a TV column. There was an old joke, I'm sure you've heard, that goes from public relations, saying never let a good crisis go to waste. And I'm absolutely convinced, whether it be sports team public relations people, not all of them, but enough of them, that they see COVID as now an excuse to limit access to the media. Perhaps this is a fallout from the recent political wars that we've seen over the last few years, where it's easy, where instead of welcoming the media and seeing them as both a necessity for profits, because let's face it, we give their products coverage, but also a way of informing our readers. They understood that. I just get a feeling now that it's gone the other way, the press be damned, and I'm not very happy about it, but I see this COVID being used as a cudgel. Even when there's no, as you pointed out, we're vaccinated, I'm boosted, you want me to wear a mask, whatever it is, there's no reason that we shouldn't be able to start getting our lives back. Again, this is not a Joe Rogan approach here. This is just fact. Let's do it intelligently, sensibly. There's no reason that we couldn't do this. And you're 100% right.
In a moment, I'm going to ask Lloyd about some sports that may be starting to get traction on television he thinks might become national attractions, and his thoughts about the TV world, especially with the upfront events coming up at last in person after 2 years back in New York. But first, let's give you our classic trivia question of the week, and I promise it's a football question. 5 prize in play, and here it is. When did Sunday Night Football start on NBC? We want the year. When did Sunday Night Football start on NBC? When did Sunday Night Football start on NBC? NBC? If you know the answer, and we're talking about the year, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Make sure you enclose your name and where you're emailing from. First with the correct answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWT. Remember, in order to win, play in, and all the very best. I noticed in your columns you also give time to some of the lesser-known professional teams in sports like women's soccer, lacrosse, rugby, and so forth. Do you think any of these new or fairly new professional sports leagues could really make it on the national stage, whether it's Major League Rugby, the National Crossing? I saw the Riptide game over the weekend on MSG Plus. That's Madison Square Garden Plus's offshoot network here in New York, the New York metro area. Rugby, things like that.
You know, it's funny. Out of all of them, they all sound like they could work. And they all have passionate followings. Like I said, the English Premier League has their dedicated following. Why shouldn't Australian rugby? I have to say I'm personally a big fan of the National Lacrosse League. The players are great. They're interesting stories because their athletes have 9-to-5 day jobs. So it's really easy to root for them and identify with them. And it's a fun game to watch. It's hockey with sticks. Maybe it's sticks instead of skates, but it's terrific. The problem is that I think perhaps the gaming is going to hurt them rather than help them, because it just seems to be a consolidation. People just want to bet on their football, maybe basketball, lesser extent baseball. You know, no one's going to say, gee, I'm going to take the Buffalo Bandits and give 2 goals against the Riptide. It just seems that's the way the sports editors and the decision makers seem to be looking at things lately. On the other hand, the NLL has never done itself any favors. They've been around for 20-some-odd years. They've had ample opportunity. And it just seems that either the – how can I say this – they just have never cut deals with networks they should be getting. It's either always on ESPN3. It's always kind of that niche form, like Bleacher Report, BR Plus, whatever it is. They've never put the product where it's accessible to people for whatever the reason. I'll even give an example. Right now I think they're on ESPN Plus, and I contact the NLL's PR department. I said, look, I'm a writer. As you point out, Simon, I try to write about it. I want to inform my readers. I said, can you give me a media code so I can cover, just watch these games? And they said, no, you're going to have to subscribe. And you know what? Look, that's fine. I'm not looking for freebies per se, but it's, you know, we have so much to watch and do, Simon, that, you know, I just wouldn't get my value doing it. And, again, they don't put that extra effort. It's like I call doing it nickel and diming, not putting the financial resources into your product. So I love lacrosse. I don't see that taking off. Women's soccer just doesn't see it. It hasn't played at the national level. Look, the WNBA is as successful, you know, a women's professional league as there is, and even that's certainly had ups and downs. As Jimmy Dolan can tell you, the owner, he had to sell the Liberty because it just wasn't doing well. So I don't know how well they really do. So I wish I could be more optimistic, more sanguine. I just can't.
Yeah. I have hope for lacrosse. I have hope for rugby. I have hope for the National Women's Soccer League. I saw the game last summer on CBS. So the Jen Hildreth, by the way, is a talent to watch. But I thought their halftime show where they had the commissioner, who should have been asked a lot of questions, didn't. They didn't cover the sexual harassment situation there. It was like a 2-minute interview. It was botched all the way. Really too bad, because I thought the coverage was really good. And I think, again, Jen Hildreth is a wonderful talent to watch for play-by-play, not just in women's soccer, but other sports. I think she has
But I don't want to be Debbie Downer here. I do have some upbeat news where I think is going to be successful. The United States Football League. I know spring football has been cursed, but I've got to tell you, I really feel pretty good about this USFL launch this time around.
I do too, and the opening game is going to be prime time on Fox and NBC, which I think is a big deal.
And it's funny, I caught the XFL. It's 2 years ago. It was like one of the last things before the pandemic occurred. I was at a New Jersey Gladiators game, and you know, it's funny. It was a good product. I like what they were doing. The idea of letting teams have 1.2 point, a 3 point extra if they scored a touchdown. I like some of the twists they made. And here's the best part, that if I remember correctly, it's been going on 2 years, the players themselves were talented players, but they weren't mammoth-sized. So you could see a 5'6" running back. You could see maybe a 6'2 linebacker, and they were skilled players, the receivers. The kicker, I think, Matthew McClary of the Gladiators, he was better than whoever the Jets and Giants had this year. I mean, these were talented players. It was a good product. And unfortunately, COVID reared its ugly head and finished off the league. I'm going to be excited to see what Dwayne Johnson does next year when he tries to revive it. But there's a good market for it. They also put games on at a nice family time, Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Or Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. You had weekend matinees. Baseball doesn't even do that on Saturdays anymore. I mean, this was really smart.
Absolutely, and I think that I think I have a lot of hope for USFL and fan control football also, and looking forward. I hope the XFL rules, like the different ways you score points on a field goal or point after, were adopted in the USFL. Lloyd, we got to run. It's been a pleasure to have you on again.
Simon, we'll do this again. Thank you.
Queens Chronicle website is available nationally, queenschronicle.com. You check it out.
Thank you, Simon.
Lloyd, a pleasure always. Take care, and we'll see you soon on the Upfront event trail in person in New York. It's going to happen, and looking forward to both of us getting back on that scene.
Thanks, Simon. You too. We'll have some fun. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Take care. Lloyd Carroll from the Queens Chronicle joining me here in New York. Don't forget, Friday, our next episode, 1.5 hour earlier than usual, with Ann Schell from Pearl TV and Marquez Houston from the new Tubi movie, Howard High. 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. Came and land today's program. Want to catch up on episodes you missed? Go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, we're available 24/7 all week long on podcasts. If you missed our episodes from last month or episode earlier today, go to Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, the iRadio Podcast Network, Verbal and Reason. We hope to have some news about a website possibility on our show Friday. Remember, we love hearing from you. Email me at simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. However you communicate with us, we communicate back within 24 hours. Why? Because, as always, what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toast, Blog Talk Radio's general manager. Jay Sonnenberg is head of content. Website services provided by On Podium, the Internet's new podcast outpost. For details, go to onpodium.com. Taras Fakis is our web coordinator. Tomorrow we televised brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook or two or more, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com makes a great gift for you or anyone you love, whether it's today, Chinese New Year, Black History Month, any time of the year. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Thank you to all of our guests today and all of you for tuning in. We are back on Friday, 1.5 hour earlier than normal, 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and all of our podcast affiliates. Whatever you're up to be now and then, please make it safe and make it great, especially if you were hit by the snowstorm this past weekend. If you haven't been vaccinated, see your doctor, check your medical history, find about all the options available to you, including the new pills that, by the way, starting now, are being available in New York with a prescription. And then make a choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.